This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Hey, hey, hey.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Hello, everybody. This is episode number 40 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are recording the day before Christmas Eve, and this episode will come out on Christmas Day, so happy holidays to our listeners.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I do find it interesting, Chris, that when we recorded a couple weeks ago, you were boasting about the fact that you hadn't been sick all year.
Correct.
And how are you feeling right now?
A tad bit under the weather.
Aww.
But I haven't had a fever.
Had a fever. Do you know, like, what it is? Like, is it a cold? Is it a flu?
It's an upper respiratory virus. Ain't no thing. I'm good.
She's like, I just need to breathe out of this inhaler and maybe a mask, but I'll be all right.
Yep. Been using nasal sprays and just getting all, like, Darth Vader-y about it, like, in bed, because I'll be like... like while I'm trying to sleep, but it'll all be fine in a couple days, I hope.
Speaking of Darth Vader, have you all seen the new Star Wars movie?
Not yet.
Yes. Hallie, come on.
I have to make good on my Jewish tradition of seeing a movie on Christmas.
Oh, sweet.
I haven't seen it either. I had nobody to see it with. Hint, Chris, hint.
Just say, do it. I'm ready anytime. I want to see it like a bajillion times. It was so good.
That's good. Yeah, I wanted somebody to see it with, and I was kind of like, I was kind of hoping you would call me to ask if I wanted to go see it. So I was like kind of waiting by the phone, like, I'm ready, Chris, whenever you want to go. And then I saw that Chris went, and I was like, okay, she's just saying she went so that when she asked me to go, it's going to be, she's not going to ask me to go. Okay. So.
Yeah, I want to go again. Don't worry, we'll go.
All right, cool. So we have a new review on iTunes. We asked our listeners to push us past the 40 mark, and one of them came through. We received a 5-star review from Alak96, and Alak says, Erin and the ladies of the Girlfriend Bracket provide consistently enjoyable content for both MTG and a variety of other subjects. Definitely subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you so much for that. Woman of Excellence this week is a badass known as Liz Richardson. Liz is a level 2 judge, I believe, from the East Coast. I will never forget the first time I ran into Liz. I was at Gen Con, and I saw this very tall lady judge approach me with a monstrous afro and very, very thick knee socks. I believe they were even rainbow colored. And when I first saw her, I was like, you need to judge everything. Just from here on out, like I any event I'm at, you have to judge. And she's very boisterous and very strong. She's also, I think she's been a host for like the pro tours and for the World Cups. Like sometimes they get judges to work like the welcome table and hand out swag and things like that. I received several nominations for Liz from other judges who said that they encouraged her to stay in the program and that she supported them. She also received the most nominations for the Exemplar program this wave at 16.
Wow.
Yeah, she is fantastic. And I remember, Chris, when we went and hung out with Patrick Sullivan in July, we visited him at his hotel in Chicago, and we walk in the door, and like we're not really sure where to go, and all of a sudden we hear this, girl, and normally that noise comes from me, and so we both look around, and I'm like, Chris is like, I didn't do it, and I'm like, I didn't do it. And, of course, it was Liz. So she's just fantastic, and she's definitely an asset to the judge community, and so we wanted to thank her for all that she does. Hot Topics this week, the OG, Melissa DeTora, is back.
Yay!
Yeah.
She wrote an article over at TCG Player explaining what happened at Wizards, and it basically boils down to the fact that she was a contract employee, and her contract expired, and Wizards simply didn't have any full-time positions to offer her, so she's temporarily not with them. It sounds like they definitely want her back. Matt Tabak was on Twitter and said that he's pushing for her to come back, and they'd be stupid not to have her come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like this is actually quite common in Seattle. Like, I've heard this. I know John Laux was recently let out of his contract, or his contract expired. And it's funny, because people who don't live in Seattle, this sounded so foreign to them. And the Seattle lights were just sort of like, this is just another day in paradise.
Yeah, that was something that I had to learn the hard way when I moved to Seattle, that it's commonplace for contractors to have to take a six-month leave of absence before they can re-sign another contract with a company they work for. And living on the East Coast, I had never heard of that, but apparently it happens all the time out here.
Yeah. So, and she also said that she will be doing coverage. She will be doing some text coverage, I believe, for Wizards, which is awesome. And she will be at GP Oakland along with Frank, and Frank will be allowed to play on the Pro Tour because he had earned an invite at GP Miami shortly before she got the job. And then because she went to work for them, he couldn't cash that in. But it sounds like he was able to sort of get that invite retroactively applied to him, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
I had to laugh, though. I made the mistake of going on Reddit after she announced this, and there were all these conspiracy theories. Like, there were people that were like, Melissa's responsible for the oath leaks. And I was like, can you, as if, like, can you imagine sweet, quiet Melissa DeTora being like, fuck y'all. Like,
no,
I mean, you would never suspect her, you know? And then there were also the people that were like, you know, Melissa was only hired because the people pushing for diversity and Wizards wanted to get them off her back. And it's just like, and so they're letting her go. Why? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It was just complete ridiculousness.
Haters gonna hate.
Absolutely. I have to say, though, I have such conflicting emotions when it comes to Melissa, and specifically in this situation. And I remember even when she left the first time, I remember when she said that she got the job at Wizards, and I was happy for her, but at the same time, you know, as a member of the community and as a woman, I had these feelings of, no, don't go, like, we need you. Because anytime the conversation of Women in Magic comes up, people always point to her and Jackie. And say, you know, well, with Melissa DeTora, what's going to happen? Or, you know, anytime the commentary issue comes up, well, you can get Melissa DeTora, but she works. And people don't seem to understand that there are other women other than Melissa and Jackie.
Right.
And so when Melissa left the first time, I was really convinced that the community would really suffer without her. And then I had to kind of tell myself or remind myself that she can't do things just for the community. You know, she has to chase her own happiness, and she can't do things just because the community wants her to or other women want her to. And I kind of had a similar reaction when she announced she was coming back, where, like, as a community member, I was like, yes, thank God you're back. We could use you. But then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That means you don't have a job. Like, that's crappy. And, like, you know, I felt almost bad for being happy that she was back. So I really had to kind of temper those emotions. The SCG Players Championship was this past weekend. Jim Davis won the whole thing.
Hooray.
He was playing a red-green Tron in Modern and a red-green Eldrazi in Standard, and I believe Sultai Delver in Legacy.
Yeah.
I think that's his drug of choice.
Yep.
There was a lot of talk about the deck choices that these guys came with to the Players' Championship, and it seemed like there were two distinct camps. There were the people who tried to metagame the event, like the Roanoke guys for Legacy. Brad, Todd, and Tom showed up with Death and Taxes, which people did not expect from these three. Specifically Tom. Tom is a known Infect player, and it seemed to work really well for them. And then there were people who kind of stuck with what they knew, like Joe Lissette brought Miracles. He's been playing Miracles for years, and there was a lot of discussion about which one was the right thing to do. So what do you guys tend to believe when you go to tournaments? Like, do you try to metagame, or do you just like to play what you know?
Play what you know seems to be safe for me, especially because play what I know is usually play something fun, and I'm completely okay with that. You know, if I want to make my sideboard a little more competitive to try to tailor it to what I think the metagame might be, sure, but I'd rather keep my deck something that I enjoy piloting in, something that I like to play.
I used to do, like, the play what I know when I was just kind of getting into competitive, and when I started to play Modern and I didn't know what all the other decks necessarily did or what specific cards were going to come in out of their sideboard. I definitely played the same deck for, like, a year straight. But now that I feel a lot more comfortable with the format and with my play skills, I'm more open to trying to metagame. The only deck that I really will not and should not play is Scape Shift. I played it at an FNM one time, and these poor people that I was playing against, I was like, no, I Scape Shift, and I just get, you know, five mountains, and then you're dead. And they're like, that's not how it works. And I was like, no, really. really, that is. I've seen it done. And yeah, that's not how it works. So, Scapeshift is something I would probably never play competitively. But overall, I'm kind of a mix. I like to play something I'm kind of comfortable with, but I'm also getting much better at adapting to metas and being able to adapt my play strategy to whatever deck I think is the best.
Yeah, I'm definitely a mix as well. I know in formats like Modern or Legacy that really reward knowing your deck, and formats that I play less often, I definitely try to stick to one deck and try to practice it as much as possible. But in Standard, I'm usually so much more comfortable with the format that I can adapt and try different things from week to week.
Now let me ask you this, because I've tried to metagame before, and I've always failed at it. And what I guess what I get confused by is sort of how you determine that. So like let's say we're going to Oakland, as we've said before, and you know we don't know what the format's going to look like. Like we have a pretty good idea right now. Like I think we all know what we're going to play, but you know when you're determining what a metagame is going to look like, do you look at like MTG Goldfish? Like do you look at their rankings to see what's happening online? Do you look at like what's happening in your local area? Because that's what trips me up, is like, you know, there's the local metagame, there's the regional metagame, there's the national metagame, there's the online metagame. It seems really hard to, like, you know, put your finger on the pulse of it and be right.
I look a lot at mtgtop8.com. Mm-hmm. They have, like, all of the decks from all of the tournaments posted and what's most popular and what's winning and stuff. I look at that a lot, and I try and follow the most recent events because it seems like, you know, there's the people who can afford one deck and play that deck the whole way through, and then there's the people who are like, oh, this one last weekend, I'm going to build that and bring that. And so I think weighing both of those as options is a good way to metagame. I don't really look at my local because, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere, Montana, so that's not usually a good reflection on what the rest of the world is doing, but I usually use, like, MTG Top 8 and just the most recent tournaments.
Yeah, I do the same thing, for the most part. Look at them, kind of see what's going on, especially if I want to know, you know, what I want to play, like, at an Open coming up, or Grand Prix or something, be like, okay, well, what were the big decks? At least I want to try to tailor my sideboard to try to tackle those if I face them.
Yeah, what I usually do is I look at what the big decks are, and I usually try to see how I can gain an edge over them. So seeing what some of like the big picture overarching themes of the format are, you know, how fast is the format? Are there any specific strategies that can be easily hated out? Things like that. I remember maybe a year ago when the Abzan Whip deck started becoming really popular. I just looked and saw how much ground Abzan Whip and Sidisi Whip were gaining, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to play Anafenza, because that seems pretty good right now. And I ended up doing pretty well in a tournament for that reason. So I generally like to look at the big picture.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to fall more on Chris's side, where it's like, I will play the same shell, but I will tweak the shell depending on what I think I'm going to face. So that's usually what I end up doing.
And it also seems like sometimes, like, the Star City circuit has different meta than, like, the Grand Prix circuit. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's worth, I mean, you want to bring a deck that can beat people's homebrews that you might play in the first 3 to 4 rounds of the Grand Prix. And then you also want to bring a deck that can beat, you know, the decks that have been doing well at both the Star Cities and the GPs. Or if you think, you know, the Star City decks won't be there, et cetera, et cetera. But I've noticed that the metas seem quite different sometimes between Star City and Grand Prix.
You also brought up a really good point, Katie, about how sometimes, like, the first 3 rounds you tend to play more what the kids call jank. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I've gone to so many events, not even limited to Star City, and, like, you know, I will have my what I perceive to be a better deck than jank. And then I will lose to, like, you know, like I was playing in GP Minneapolis last year, it was Modern, or 2 years ago, and I'm facing, like, mono red goblins with Goblin King and Blood Moon, and I'm like, what? Like, I had practiced for Affinity, and I practiced for Twin, and I was ready for, like, the big dogs, and all of a sudden, and I'm just like, what on earth? And, like, and I hear that that's common. And once you sort of get past the 3rd round, you know, then you start playing, like, you know, the stock decks more if you do well in those 3 rounds. And if you don't, well, then you tend to face more colorful decks. Mm-hmm. SCG also announced the locations for their regionals tournament with that beautiful playmat.
Very excited.
See, you know she's sick. It took her a second. but the regional championship is happening. They're actually offering trophies. They're, like, really pretty. And then, like, the winner gets a red trophy. Like, I'm completely down with that. They announced the location. So Chris and I think we're going to Chicago for ours.
Yep.
There happens to be one in Seattle. Katie, you could go to Colorado.
Yeah, that's only like a 12-hour drive. That's pretty good.
But I couldn't help but notice, like, I don't know if you guys saw the map, but, like, even with regionals, like, there's a clear divide between, like, the Midwest and the East Coast. Like, there's one in Seattle, there's one in San Diego, one in Phoenix, one in Colorado, and that's all the West Coast gets. Mm. Like, that's really crummy.
I need to move to Seattle and live with Hallie.
Hallie, do you have any interest in going to this? I know it's modern.
Absolutely, yeah. I've actually been asking for more modern deck recommendations because I haven't played the format in so long. But, you know, I've been focusing on standard a lot lately, and I think it would be good for me to, you know, get out and try some modern again soon. So I'm excited to have an excuse to prepare for another type of tournament.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I can see you playing something like Twin.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm really happy that I invested in Grixis Delver, because even though, you know, the deck has sort of fallen out of favor, it has most of the same pieces as Twin, so it's really easy for me to just sort of port it out. I mean, I still have the Scalding Tarns and everything online, so I could definitely try Twin.
Yeah, or I can see you playing Affinity. I don't know why, but, like, I kind of think of it like a slideshow, and it's like when the slides go past, it's like, Tron, no, next slide. And then I look at Jund, and I'm like, okay, next slide. But when I land on, like, the Affinity slide, I can see it for you.
Affinity was actually the first modern deck that I ever built, and I played it for a little bit. I stopped playing it because there were a couple local modern tournaments in Seattle that a lot of, like, FNM level players would go to, and they were all playing Affinity or Burn, like, all of them, because it was the most affordable deck at the time. And so I went to one of these tournaments, and in the first five rounds, I played Affinity, like, four times, and I was just like, I do not want to play this mirror, and just, like, dismantled the deck and was like, okay, next.
I don't even want to play a deck I like against four times. Mm-hmm. Like, I like going to tournaments and getting a variety. Like, I like being able to play, you know, an Affinity and a Living End and a Jund. And, like, I'm never happy when it's even decks I like. Like, I get really disappointed when it's just the same deck over and over again.
Especially when you're playing the mirror over and over again.
Yeah. You know, that's actually something that plays into my deck choice. Like, I have to enjoy playing the mirror, or I have to feel like there's just no chance in hell I'll face the mirror. Like, I've never played in the Ad Nauseam mirror before, and I hope to God I never do. And that's part of the reason I chose the deck, was that the odds of me having to do that are fairly minimal. But when I was playing Jund, it was so common, and I didn't really enjoy the Jund mirror, and it was just bad.
I love the control mirror.
Do you?
I could play it for like 15 rounds in one day. I love it. It's so fun.
What do you love about it, Katie?
I just love, like, trying to outgrind the other person. Like, land go is, like, my favorite game to play. And then they always crack first. They always do something first. And then I'm like, gotcha. And then it's just the best feeling. It's just so good.
I can kind of relate to that. Like, I definitely feel like there's, like, I felt that way in Innistrad Standard, because I was playing Jund at that time too. And I remember my friend Amanda, who I've talked about lovingly on the show, she was also playing Jund. And, you know, there are some mirror matches where I really feel like it does boil down to skill a lot more than other matchups. And, you know, I have to say, in those days, I really did enjoy the Jund mirror, because it would come down to, like you said, you know, one person would land a Dead Bridge chant, you know, or one person would land a Garrick, you know, while Garrick Primal Hunter, you know, and just sort of that card that breaks the mirror open. So I can kind of relate to that.
Yeah, it's a good feeling.
Yeah. There was, some people had talked to me when Jim Davis won the event, and I had expressed that I was really happy that Jim Davis won. I watched his matches. I thought he played green-red Eldrazi really well. I thought he played green-red Tron really well. And some people seemed surprised that I was happy for him, because, you know, we were really critical of him when he wrote that Ladies in Magic article. And, you know, I found it interesting that people would be surprised that I could root for him. And the way that I like to sort of, you know, explain that is, it seems like he's obviously shown some growth. I know for a fact that several people talked to him after the fact and were like, come here, girl, we're gonna We're going to teach you some things. And so if somebody has obviously shown that they've improved themselves or that they've listened to the feedback they've been given, I can't really stay mad at them. And also, too, it was never personal. You know, I think even when we did the episode where we talked about it, we were all really clear that we have nothing against him personally. You know, we felt that the article was kind of whack, but we had nothing against him as a person. And so I didn't see a problem with me being happy for him, given, you know, the criticism that we had given him.
I still don't like that he's a Ranger fan, but that's okay. We'll get over it.
Hashtag Team Petty. The most emotional moment, aside from Jim Davis, you know, winning the whole thing, was Patrick Sullivan gave a bit of a sign-off towards the end, and he got a little emotional. And I also didn't know that this was one of Sedgwick's last shows, too. I understand that he's cutting back as well.
That's what he made it sound like.
Yeah. But Patrick's moment in particular, you know, he kind of thanked everybody for tuning in and also thanked everybody who worked so hard on the events because people don't really realize how much work goes into them. And he got a little choked up.
Yeah, I got a little choked up, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very sad to see that. And like we've said before, you know, he's a really great guy. Him and Sedgwick, I think, have certainly revolutionized coverage. Mm-hmm. They've set the bar for what coverage should be. And I know Patrick will be in Oakland. He'll actually be playing in the GP. So I hope that we get to see him there, and I just really wish him all the best. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Speaking of commentators, towards the end of the show, Sedgwick made a comment about some of the new faces that we could expect to see next year. Some of those new faces include a young man named Craig Kremples, Andrew Boswell, who we love, and Chris Van Meter. Yeah.
So
end of list.
Yeah. So I think all of these people have potential. Craig Kremples, I believe, won nationals in like 2004 or something. His name sounds very familiar to me. I know these are all very capable Magic players who will probably be very good in the booth. And I would take any of them. Absolutely. I don't know that having all of them and excluding, you know, people of other genders and races is necessarily the best way to go.
So here's my take on this, and I'm going to preface this by saying that, again, this is not personal. Like you said, Hallie, these are nice guys, these are great players, no shade whatsoever. However, these three are gentlemen that appear to have little to no coverage experience. Mm. And so it's obvious that some time or some energy is going to need to be spent to groom them or train them for this position. Why couldn't you spend that time and energy on a woman? Mm-hmm. Because the main argument that I keep hearing whenever the topic of getting a woman in coverage comes up is, well, there's no unqualified. Melissa works at Wizards, and we'd have to teach somebody. And it's like, but you're already having to teach one of these three guys how to be good at coverage. So if you're already having to train somebody, why not make one of them a woman? Like, I could see if you had somebody who was ready right out of the box, and you didn't have to train them, and they were vastly overqualified for the position. I could maybe understand that. Like, let's say, God forbid, Marshall got laid off. And Marshall needed a coverage job. Okay, absolutely. Get Marshall in there. He has the experience. You don't need to train him. Whatever. But these three, you know, again, are nice guys, but they've never really done the job before. So I don't understand why you're not choosing to invest in a female commentator. I just don't understand.
Yeah, and I hate that people always say, oh, there are no qualified people, to imply that there are no qualified women, or that, like, women are obviously not qualified for this, because I think there's an assumption you make when you say that, you know, women are inherently less qualified for this than men are, and I think that's really dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a thought and I just lost it. I also hear the argument of, well, did any women apply? And it's like, I didn't even see a job posting for this. Like, if there was one, I certainly didn't hear about it. And I would like to think that I would have. And even then, I know for a fact that there are opportunities available to people that you don't necessarily have to apply for. I've had people approach me about things where it's like, psst, there's something happening. we can kind of get you in, like, in the consideration, go ahead and apply for this, or go ahead and you know, pursue this. And so, again, if it's something that you really wanted to happen, you can't tell me, how was there no one? Like, how was there no one available that you could have approached if you really wanted to and said, hey, we're really committed to getting a woman in the booth, we're really committed to increasing diversity or improving diversity, we think you'd be a good candidate, we think you are someone that we could invest or mold. How was there no one? Like, how, I just don't understand.
Yeah, I had a little bird tell me on my shoulder that it was time to put in a resume if I wanted to try and pursue it, and I don't know where that would have gone, but obviously with school it would not have gone far. But it just seemed like they weren't reaching out and they weren't making it public that they wanted somebody. So I'm not sure if somebody reached out to these three guys and was like, hey, time to send in a resume, or, you know, if the coverage crew reached out to them and was like, hey, do you want to come on? Because either way, it seems like the opportunity was not put out there for other people, I guess.
Yeah, you're right.
And that seems a bit unfair.
Yeah, Cedric did say, you know, he didn't say that these were the only three people. He did say these three and more. So I'm trying to keep an open mind that the and more might eventually lead to a woman, but I have to admit I'm not entirely optimistic. Chris, how did you feel about the Players' Championship as a whole and then the announcement of who they were thinking of for coverage?
I mean, I was happy that they announced some at least some people I liked. Like, I have no beef with Chris Van Meter, and I was like, that'd be really cool. But like you said, you know, whether or not they actually have the experience, I guess that will remain to be seen. I mean, when are they supposed to start, did they even say? Isn't it supposed to be for the next event?
I think they said Crumples was going in for, like, the first open of 2016, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think they said.
Like, I think they're starting him off right away.
That sounds about right.
Because then you just wonder, like, well, how much practice, how much, you know, what do they have to train them to do in order to have them become competent at, or is it kind of going to be a baptism by hellfire type of thing?
Yeah, you have to wonder what the criteria are, where it's like, what did you use to determine that these three qualified that you also used to determine that these other people didn't?
Right, exactly. So I was hopeful once they said and more, and I was like, ooh, are we maybe the and more? Like, that would be cool. So, I mean, I would like to think that, you know, they definitely want to promote diversity in this game and for coverage and other things like that. So we'll see what happens. I'll keep an open mind, but if something doesn't change, like maybe in the next year, then maybe that could mean that things are on a downswing. I'm not sure, but I'm hopeful that something can change.
Yeah. Speaking of change, there was a shitstorm, for lack of a better word, that took place over the past 2 or 3 days. It started on Monday. The DCI released a list of suspended players from tournaments, and people couldn't help but notice that a large number of those players happened to be judges from the southeast region of the U.S. Some level 2s, some level 3s, some level 1s, and I believe even a regional coordinator was one of the people. Our friend Roberto Gonzalez from MTG Focus was on the list. He received a 3-year ban. And all of this had to do with leaks. The Oath of the Gatewatch leaks, I think some even before that. But the judge community in particular was incensed by this. And they, in protest, took down the magicjudges.org website. And said that we do not support this, we don't think this is okay. Several of the judges indicated that they didn't even know why they were suspended, that they had received their notifications, you know, earlier in the day and weren't given much information and were given the impression that they couldn't necessarily appeal it. This also led to a lot of judges coming forward and just kind of talking about the treatment that they receive as judges and how they feel that this was sort of the cherry on top, you know, of a really crummy Sunday. And it's led to a lot of discussions about, you know, how Wizards treats the community and how they treat their judges. It doesn't show any signs of slowing down. I know Helena's going on MTG Focus tonight, which is interesting considering that Roberto was suspended. Mm-hmm. Like, I would think you'd go on, like, a neutral podcast, but, like, you know, hey, girl, we're going to suspend you for 3 years, but then we're going to come on your show and tell you why. Like, ooh. That's a little awkward. But so Helene appears to be trying to do some damage control. Wizards did release a follow-up statement in addition to the initial statement, but this doesn't appear to be dying down anytime soon. Katie, as a judge yourself, you know, how do you feel about all this? Like, you know, watching all of this go down and everything like that.
That's a big question. I've seen a lot of posts this week by judges. It seems like everybody's written like a 5-paragraph thing on Facebook. And a lot of what people say is be careful what you say, because they don't know how far-reaching this is, or, you know, if it's done, or if things might come back to haunt you later on. I've been trying to wrap my mind around how I feel about it, and it kind of goes from, like, apathetic to enraged to, like, okay, I can see that, to, like, all shades of in between. But, I mean, Wizards is a company, and they have to do what they think is right. And if this is what they think is right and the entire community disagrees, I think they need to take that under consideration. But if this is what they think is right and they're going to stick to their guns, then, I mean, at least they're sticking to their guns, I suppose. This kind of thing, it just seems like these community enragements keep happening, and that makes me, it makes me sad. Like, I feel like I want to distance myself from the game in a way. You know, I still love playing, I love doing the podcast, but it's like, I don't want to scroll through my Twitter, which is like my main connection to Magic, because all I see is all these people tweeting about this thing, and it's like, you know, these fads, if you'll call them that, come and go, but it seems like this year we've had so many big community outpourings of anger that it's just like, it feels tiresome. Like, it's tiring for me to go through social media. And maybe that's just me. I saw somebody said, like, you need to start using your block button more. But, you know, and maybe I do, but I wish that there was more of a focus on positivity in the community instead of on these, like, negative outcries all the time. I think, you know, judges are volunteers, but I don't, and they are, you know, usually well-respected pillars in the community, but I don't think that should put them above any punishment that anybody else could receive. But I do think that they should be treated with respect. You know, if Wizards thinks that this whole thing stemmed from this Facebook group or whatever the latest thing is that they released, then, you know, I think that is their prerogative. I don't think just because you're an L3 or an L2, you should be above any sort of, you know, reprimanding. But I do think that you should take that status into consideration, because you don't just get L3 overnight. It's not an easy feat. And I think without further, like, proof, it's hard to say what, you know, if it was right or wrong. Because, it, you know, if they were in this Facebook group and it was leaked, you know, that's for Wizards to figure out. And if Wizards is wrong, then I'm sure they will apologize profusely, but I don't think that'll make up for, you know, what's happened so far.
I guess I just feel bad for the community that's going to lose these judges in their area, because, you know, without judges, you don't have certain events, and then that hurts the community as a whole. And I remember a lot of people were kind of upset with Trick's response to the leaks, and they were saying that it felt like he was attacking the community. Now, I didn't feel that from his post at all, but now because of all this happening, it kind of feels like because certain people made mistakes or bad choices or whatever, now everybody gets punished. Not just these people that are getting banned, because now perhaps events can't be held or other things going on, and that just is bad for the community as a whole. So it just kind of feels like one decision that was made affected more people than, you know, just the people immediately involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also very concerned about the community in Florida. I'm not a judge. I'm not all that connected to the judge community besides being friends with several judges. And we obviously don't have all the facts in this case, so I'm withholding judgment for now, but I am obviously very concerned about this community, because regardless of what the facts of the case is, the fact of the matter is that a large part of the country is missing many of its leaders right now. And, you know, as we've learned from reading Mark Nestico's article about PPTQs that he released over the summer, I believe we discussed it on the show, Florida is a very spread out region. The PPTQs are held 2 hours apart in a lot of areas, and so getting judges to staff those events is going to be even more difficult than it already was. I believe the only L2 in Missouri, not Missouri, sorry, Mississippi, was also part of the suspension. So there are a lot of major events that are going to be coming up in this area. We're going to have PPTQs again starting in late January. Also in late January, there's going to be a Star City Open in Atlanta, which I'm sure pulls a lot of judges from Florida and other surrounding states. So I am obviously very concerned about how that region is going to staff its events when so many people are missing.
You know, my thought on this from the outside looking in, and again, echoing Hallie, I don't have all of the facts, but I can't help it. I've been noticing, you know, like you said, Katie, I've been noticing these long missives, these open letters that people are writing, and it sounds like they're trying to convince wizards that these judges are good people. And I don't think that's in dispute. Like, I don't think what they did should be enough to override them as good people. Like, I still think they're good people. I don't think one bad act takes that all away. However, on the flip side, I also don't think all of the good they've done can overshadow the one bad thing that they did. So I'm seeing a lot of people that are starting these petitions, and they're like, you know, this judge reads to the blind on the weekends, and this judge, you know, always gives rare blood, and this judge does so many great things. And I'm not saying they don't. I'm saying that they're good people. But I don't necessarily agree with people who are trying to use that as a reason why the suspension should be lifted. If they still did one bad thing, if they were still trading in leaks, if they still didn't tell people about leaks, that's a bad thing. And I don't care how much charity you're doing, I don't care how many judges you mentored, that one moment requires some sort of consequence. And like I said, I just don't agree with the people who are trying to lead these campaigns to get us to prove that or to understand how good these people are. We're not saying they're not good, but I just don't think all of that's enough to erase what they did. And I just feel like that these campaigns are not very organized. I feel like there might be better ways to go about that. And I feel like it also could open up the discussion a bit more to how judges are treated. You know, like this could be an opportunity too. There's been talk of, like, getting judges to unionize. There have been talk of getting judges to demand better treatment. And, like, this is something I could see being a stepping stone to that. But if this, you know, movement is simply just to get these people unbanned, I feel like there's just a lot more you could do with this much inertia, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I definitely saw some great posts suggesting, you know, better treatment for judges and whatnot at big events and all of that. But I also saw a couple like disheartening things where there was judges that were like, well, if you aren't angry about this happening, then you aren't like a supporter of judges everywhere, or like very extreme radical things that were like, if you support wizards in this decision, then you are a judge hater. And I was like, what? Whoa.
No.
That's going a little too far.
Yeah, and so I was a little disheartened by those. I mean, the whole thing is disheartening on a bunch of different levels, but I do hope that some change comes out of it, and I just wish Wizards was a little bit more transparent in what happens. Brooke put it a good way, is that they start these wildfires, and then, like, a week later, they kind of, like, put them out with, you know, more announcements, more explanation, instead of just coming out and stating it all in one go. It's like, you know, everybody gets all riled up, and then in a while they put a band-aid on it, and then they have another band-aid, and then they wrap it with a bandage, and just, you know, keeps going. So I do wish that they were just more transparent up front at the beginning, but they obviously have no obligation to be, so I can understand it from both sides.
So because this episode is going to come out on Christmas Day, and because we still haven't gotten that many great listener questions yet, I figured it would be fun if we had a bit of a Christmas trivia contest. And the winner is going to win dinner on me. Only one dinner. I'm not paying for the whole weekend. I don't like you guys that much. But suffice it to say, if we go out to dinner, which I'm sure we will at Oakland, I will buy dinner for whoever wins this contest. So I'm going to ask you guys a series of multiple choice questions, and whoever wins will get dinner on me. And no Googling, because I will know if you Googled. Okay, so y'all ready to go?
Is it like a... like whoever buzzes in first, or is it like we go around the circle? Because I got to get my buzzer hands right out, just in case.
I actually tried to get a buzzer sound effect, and I couldn't quite get it through Audacity. Like, I could get it to play on my computer, but it wouldn't, like, go through my headphones. Like, I did a couple test runs with it, and it didn't really work. But so I think we're all going to – you're all allowed to answer, and then whoever has the most right answers after, we'll say, five questions wins. And if there's a tie, we'll keep going. Okay. All right, so this is about Christmas movies, Christmas in general. Question number one. This one's really seedy now that I think about it. Where was Mommy kissing Santa Claus? A, on the corner. B, in the bedroom. What? I didn't write this. C, under the mistletoe. Or D, in a dark alley.
Ding!
Hallie?
C, under the mistletoe.
That is correct.
Yay!
So Hallie has 1 point. I guess we're not doing the round robin thing. I guess okay. Hallie's here to win. There's nothing wrong with that. Question number two. What is Frosty the Snowman's nose made out of? A, a carrot. B, a potato. C, a button. Or D, a rock?
Ding.
Katie?
A carrot.
That is incorrect.
Ding.
Chris?
Button.
That is correct.
Damn it, Frosty.
See, I'm not going to answer that because Frosty's very traumatic to me. Question number three. In the movie Castaway, Chuck's family Christmas was interrupted by needing to go on an urgent business trip. Where was he being sent? A, Thailand. B, Vietnam. C, Malaysia. Or D, Indonesia?
Ding.
Chris?
I'll say A.
Thailand. That is incorrect.
Fuck.
Ding.
Katie?
I'll say B, whatever that answer is.
Such tentative ding.
That was Vietnam, and that is incorrect.
All I know is Wilson.
Oh, no, me too.
I've never seen it. I don't know.
Okay, so Hallie, we're down to C, Malaysia, or D, Indonesia.
I'll say Malaysia.
That is correct.
Cool.
So Hallie is at 2, Chris is at 1, Katie is... Wah, wah.
Oh, Frosty, I don't know anything about Christmas.
All right, next question. Why was Charlie Brown so depressed in A Charlie Brown Christmas? A, he felt Christmas was being commercialized. B, his friend was in the psychiatric ward. C, he felt left out of a play he was asked to direct. Or D, he was upset that his dog was decorating without him.
Ding.
Hallie?
A.
That is correct.
Yay.
Hallie's going to get dinner.
Well, if you don't jump in. Okay. Next question. Edward Scissorhands was set in which time period? A, the 60s, B, the 70s, C, the 50s, or D, the 80s?
Ding.
Chris?
C.
The 50s?
Yes.
That is correct.
Hooray!
Oh, Hallie, she coming for you. So this is five questions, and Hallie's the winner, but we can keep going with one or two more if you want.
Sure.
Yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, we're
going
to keep going. Okay. So the next question I have is... Okay, what Christmas song opened the movie Lethal Weapon? A, Jingle Bell Rock. B, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. C, Winter Wonderland. Or D, Merry Christmas, Darling?
Can we hear the answers again?
Sure. Jingle Bell Rock is A, B is Santa Claus is Coming to Town, C is Winter Wonderland, and D is Merry Christmas, Darling.
Ding. I'm going to say
Chris.
B.
B, that is incorrect.
Ding.
Damn you, Bruce Willis.
Katie?
I'll say A.
That is correct.
Yes, I got a point, guys.
Katie is on the motherfucking board. All right, so one more. So Hallie can either win this, or Chris can tie, or Katie can attempt to win this.
I can do whatever I want.
This is a really hard one. I'm warning you right now. How many separate stories appeared in the British Christmas romantic comedy Love Actually? A5, B3, C7, or D10?
I haven't actually seen that movie.
You ain't missing much, girl.
Oh, I like that
Ding.
Movie.
Katie?
Is it 5?
No.
I'm trying here, guys. I'm really trying.
Ding.
Chris?
I'll say 6.
That wasn't really optional.
I thought you said 6.
No, 3, 7, or 10.
Oh, 3, 7, or 10? I'm going to go with 7.
That's incorrect.
Fuck, that's my lucky number.
So, Hallie, that leaves 3 or 10.
I'll say 3.
That's incorrect. The answer was 10.
10 stories in
yes.
one movie?
Yes. Yeah. It's, everybody's interconnected. Yeah. It's wonderful.
That's ridiculous. All
right, so since no one got that, we'll answer one more, okay? And this one you should know, okay? It's a little old school, but come on, Katie.
Sorry.
Mogwai, the cute, fluffy animal in the movie Gremlins, was a Christmas present found in which type of store? A, an antique store. B, a bookstore. C, a delicatessen. Or D, a hardware store.
Ding.
Chris?
B.
That is incorrect.
What were the other choices?
A, antique store. C, delicatessen. Or D, hardware store.
Ding.
Hallie?
Is it an antique store?
That is correct. Hallie wins.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't remember.
I haven't seen any of these movies.
What? What, you've never seen Gremlins?
I saw Gremlins in 1997 because I talked my grandfather into buying me a Furby for my birthday. And he was like, oh, that looks just like the thing from Gremlins. And I was like, what's Gremlins? And so he rented it from Blockbuster and showed it to me.
How old were you at this time?
Like 7 or 8.
I was 4.
Oh, God, that's traumatizing. Like, here, your stuffed animal looks like this monstrous creature. Let's make you watch it.
Yeah, like halfway through the movie, I made him turn it off because I was too scared.
Oh. That's nothing. I remember being a little kid and my parents were watching The Fly with Jeff Goldblum. That'll fuck you up when you're a kid, let me tell you.
Is that why everyone calls Delver of Secrets Jeff Goldblum?
Yep.
I think so. Yeah. So, Katie, you've never seen Gremlins. You didn't see Love Actually.
Nope, never seen Castaway. Never seen Frosty.
What?
Edward Scissorhands.
Nope, never seen it.
Lethal Weapon, I can understand, because that's a little bit too old school. Charlie Brown Christmas?
I feel like I saw that one time when I was in, like, second grade.
I mean, there's nothing else to do in Bozeman. You could have plenty of time to watch movies.
I've been watching the Netflix. Actually, Love Actually is on my list.
There you go.
I haven't watched it yet.
And I expect you to count each story as it happens.
All right. I don't know if I can count that high. It tends a lot. But I'm really excited that Hallie won our Christmas trivia and she doesn't even celebrate Christmas.
I did watch hilarious. A lot of Christmas cartoons when I was a kid. Like, we have a tradition every year that Robert and I get hot chocolate and we drive around the neighborhood looking at people's Christmas displays and listening to the soundtrack from A Charlie Brown Christmas because it's like the only Christmas album that I like.
That's kind of romantic. Yeah. Aww, that's awesome. So any final thoughts before we wrap up the show?
Well, I mean, it's Festivus today. Does anyone want to air any grievances?
Oh, I have some.
Oh, girl.
I'll sit quietly.
I'm down to give you one. I think it's fairly... I'll try to tame it up a little bit. But here's my grievance. Now that I'm a blue mage... And now that I'm playing a control deck, it bothers me when I see people that run 40 kill spells and a secure the waste and call themselves a control deck. And I'm looking at these black-white control players. Like, I understand you love the Hoagland. It's a fun-looking deck. But I cannot tell you how many times I've run into that damn black-white control deck that he is championing. And it's all the same thing. It's like... Valorous Dance, Utter End, Stasis Snare, Silk Wrap, 4 Seeker of the Way. That's not a control deck. And so me being a blue player, I get very offended when I see these, I'm playing a control deck. No, 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 no. This is a control deck. You are playing 40 kill spells and 20 lands. Let's get that out of the way. And then they have the nerve to look at me like I'm doing something wrong. Like, ew, look at this blue player. Oh, my God. No, 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 no. I'm the control player. I'm the party. I'm the party, you're the guest list. That's a Timbaland reference, by the way. I don't know if anyone caught that. But... And that's my grievance. It's just these control decks that are not control decks.
Oh, man. Mine isn't nearly as good as that. I was just going to say that my grievance is working 6 days a week and only having one day off is no fun. And while I've worked way more than that in my life, my body's kind of like, no. So, to reward myself for all my hard work. I am taking an impromptu road trip next weekend to Cincinnati for the Open.
Oh, sweet!
Yep.
You're going to Cincinnati?
I am.
I want to go.
Yeah.
See what I mean? You didn't even ask me. What a terrible friend.
I'm a bad person.
You are a bad person.
I might.
I have a grievance.
What's the grievance?
All right, let it out, girl.
Okay. So, it's with my job. So, uh-oh. I worked on Thanksgiving Day and Black Friday. And I'm working Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, day after Christmas, which is like my favorite day of the year. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. Actually, basically every day from Christmas until I'm leaving for Oakland. And I am upset because, you know, I know your dog is having an emergency, but if you could just bring some brownies or something with you, we would really like that.
Great.
So just be nice to the people working on all of these holidays. That's my grievance.
Man, they don't bring you any sweet treats or anything? That sucks.
Well, sometimes, but not very often.
Our donors rule. They've been bringing us, like, cookies and cakes, and today they brought in, like, a big sack of Christmas presents, and we all got to pick one. And I'm like, man, I love the people that come in here. They're so
presents?
Awesome. Yeah, they brought presents. They were stuffed animals from the Disney store, and we all got aww. A different stuffed animal, and it was pretty righteous. And my boss picked, oh, dang it, the chameleon from Tangled. Whose name I forgot briefly, but...
There's a chameleon in Tangled?
Yeah. I'm so out of touch with what the kids are watching, you guys.
I don't remember
like,
a...
He, like, hangs out on her shoulder a lot.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name either.
Yeah, I can't remember it.
I honestly don't remember... There was the horse, like, Finn had a horse. Finn?
Sure. I can't remember his name.
But there was the male love interest. Okay, here we go. Yeah, you're right. His name was Pascal.
Pascal, that's it.
Yeah, Pascal.
Yeah.
Huh. I guess rascal. It just never, that character never really stood out to me.
Yeah, he doesn't really say anything, but he has very interesting movements and gestures and facial expressions, and he kind of adds a little flavor to the film. I myself got a stuffed Buzz Lightyear. I didn't want to pick out of the girls only bag. I'm like, we're going in the everybody bag. That's where I'm picking from.
Look at you defying gender stereotypes.
I know. It's so wonderful. So while we're airing grievances, I just want to say that during this holiday season, I'm grateful for the people that come in and give blood at my donor center because they're all amazingly awesome, generous people, and I just don't know what we would do without them. And mad props to the donor that's saying, I want to be sedated by the Ramones with me last week because we were trying to explain to the volunteer who the Ramones were. He's like, the Ramones, I've never heard of that group before. I'm like, are you serious? So, yeah, it was pretty awesome. So, you know, if you can give blood this holiday season, please do. There's a lot of accidents and other bad things that happen, and give someone another tomorrow. That's my PSA.
Awesome. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. And you can read my writing here on GatheringMagic.com.
And I'm Katie. You can find me at work every day from now until I leave for Oakland, saving animals' lives. You can also find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. YOTHKRIZ. I think I spelled that right. I can't even remember. My brain is so full of fluff right now. I can't even... And please send me pictures on Snapchat. I've been getting some good stuff from you guys and love it. And it's Cryptic Command with K's. Thank you, Katie.
You're welcome.
What did you send her?
Her a picture from Mask.
Yeah, I have these three little cute figurines. One's a hippo and one's a giraffe and one's an elephant. And they all sit and stare at me. So I sent her those.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can find our show every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Next week, you will be able to find us on Patreon. We are just about ready to launch this baby. And I couldn't be more excited. So if you want to support the show, keep an eye out for that, and we really would appreciate that. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a wonderful holiday, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.